What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar.
I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Low.
This week, we'll be chatting about Lenovo's new Razrs. There's a new Razr and Razr Plus, and yeah, they're foldables once again. They look pretty cool, kind of keeping pretty affordable prices for foldables, too. So we'll be talking about that. We'll talk about Julian Assange being set free from prison, a couple Supreme Court rulings, and oh man, we're just going to really look forward to events happening, or at least one big event happening in August, which, thank you, Google. We all want to do that. We all want to be traveling for work in August. Thank you so much. As always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. Drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. Sherlyn, I know you were very excited. You seemed so excited about the new Motorola Razr and Razr Plus. You know, they look really nice. I like the prices. What is it? $700 for the Razr, $1,000 for the Razr Plus. These are nice looking foldables. What's up this year?
I mean, very excited is a very strong way to put how I feel about these things. I think...
Are we no longer excited about foldables? Is it just like ho-hum?
I mean, I've always been. Yeah. I think I was more excited for, and here's where you could use the right word, and there's also a story behind this. Motorola did like a whole ass launch event in Brooklyn for the Motor Razr 2024 lineup.
Oh, Brooklyn's nice.
This was, this was earlier this week. The news was announced Tuesday. They also had their little event on, event on Tuesday. Featuring one Paris Hilton,
who's
apparently this like big fan of the pink Razr from way back when, right? Like she was the whole like, that's hot, and then like flip the pink phone thing. Anyway, this event also featured a magician, so I was like, all right, look, I guess I'll go. And then I went.
You heard there was going to be a magician?
No. The main reason, I was already out for a different meeting earlier that day. So I was like, all right, I'll just go to the office, chill, and then go to this event and see, like, get some like of my own hands-on time with the phones because Sam took the hands-on demo for us. So I was like, all right, I'll go take a look at the phone. But also, yes, okay. I was like, I'll try to get a selfie with Paris Hilton. Why not? And it turns out I left the event before Paris Hilton even like started to do her DJ set because I was just so impatient.
Oh,
like,
wait, she's doing like a DJ set too?
So she DJ'd at the launch event.
No, but
there
DJ
was first
Paris
like this
Hilton?
Magic show thing. I mean, please, if Lindsay Lohan can DJ in Mykonos, Paris Hilton can for sure.
Well, you know, are we going to have a fight here, Sherlyn? Because listen, if we're going to talk about somebody with, I don't know, talent of any kind, the ability to produce.
I don't know, talent's a strong
Lindsay
word.
Lohan's a good actor. I liked her until like her inevitable downfall. Good, yeah. Paris Hilton, not so much. Come on. Okay. So what did you see at this event? Did you see the magician?
Yeah.
At least?
So I will say the reason I keep bringing up the magician is because they used the magician to kind of highlight a few of these features that are debuting on the new Motorola Razr and Razr Plus. And you pointed out rightly that the pricing is one of the outstanding things. Like Sam has it in his hands-on headline that they might be the most stylish and affordable foldables of the year. The standard Razr starting at $700. I think the pricing is a little bit confusing because last year with the 2023 lineup, the Razr 40, as it was known, I think in the UK versus the Razr in the US, it was like it cost about £800, and that was quite a lot of money. That's close to $1,000 in the US, and I don't know that it ever came to the US. And so it's
I don't know about that one. But last year's Razr was also $700, so at least the base one.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I don't know. Like I'm looking at our review of the Razr 2023 and the hands-on, and it's like Matt's review, because Matt Smith, who reviewed it for us, is based in the UK, says it was £800. So that's like
let me just fill you all in here as we were doing the planning for this, because I was just like looking like, how do these compare to last year? It does seem like the pricing last year did launch at $700 and $1,000, but what weirdly happened, and I'm sure the UK folks are annoyed about this, apparently the base Razr was on sale, like quote unquote on sale, for 80% of last year for $500, which is a crazy price.
Whatever it is, let's put it this way. Motorola's pricing strategy is strange AF, but this year it seems like the base one starts at $700, and then the higher end, the Razr Plus, is $1,000 to begin with. And for that money, you're getting like a larger external display than ever. You've got more app support on the external screen. You've got some like colors, like hot pink, which is like that original Razr flip phone. And then this like leather sort of finish on the back. Sam's pictures look great. The ones I saw at the event also looked really nice. and you have some AI features now. Look, I don't know how y'all feel about magicians and magic tricks, but they've all been ruined for me because I read or watched too many like reveal the trick sort of shows.
You did it to yourself. And, okay. Yeah.
Right. And then like the magician was like, everybody hold up your phone and like Google this or calculator that and everything. And I was like, all right, fine. And but for example, the Motor Razor Plus 2024 and the Razor all have new AI-based features. For example, you can take a photo of, by the way, listen to this. You can take a photo of your outfit and the quote AI end quote will generate color themes and wallpapers for you. I was like, Alcatel did this circa 2018. Like, stop it. This is not a new feature. Stop calling things new. But there is another thing called Magic Canvas on Motorola's AI suite that will let you type in a prompt and then it will create sort of a wallpaper for your phone. So if you like dancing puppies with balloons in the background, you can use that as your wallpaper, for example. And then there's a feature that's coming called Catch Me Up. It will summarize all your notifications so you don't have to like go through all of them individually. And then Sam is excited about something called Remember This, which sounds a little bit like Microsoft's Recall. You can ask, or you can first prompt Moto to be like remembering things for you and then ask it to record a photo, screenshot, or some audio. And then it will repeat the important details back to you when you ask for those important details later on. Like, what was in that photo? Or like, what date did I leave in that screenshot? Mm. Something like that. So
you have to actively tell it to remember things, which I think.
Exactly. You had to first be. Yeah. Exactly. So it's not like in the background constantly mm-hmm. screenshotting and tracking your activity.
I just feel like people won't do it.
Good differentiation.
Yeah, because like you could just always just take a photo of something and be like, yeah, that's how we.
I wonder if it's gonna be a RAM hog too. Yeah.
Who knows? I do have to say these things look really nice, Shirlin. They, as far as like,
yeah, they look very cool.
Yeah, they look cool. I don't see a huge crease on these, and the external displays, especially on the Plus, looks so. Hot. Yeah.
Oh yeah, to quote Paris Hilton, the other thing that Sam did point out is that the crease there is still there, but that it's very faint, and he describes it as a shallow ripple that you only see at acute angles, which is wild. Like, I mean, we're getting somewhere with these things, right? It feels like from the 2023 lineup of the Razors to the 2024, what we're getting is more refinement. I mean, yes, a larger display, but I think the hardware feels like it's quite ready. For like settle, you know, in the like candy bar format that iPhones have been in for a while. I think mini photables like that are more or less mature in terms of hardware. Now it's all about the software, and apparently AI is the way.
It's the way.
Which I have thoughts on.
One thing that I've been thinking about is like, we still don't have a foldable iPhone. I feel like everyone's waiting for Apple to do something around that. The rumor was the iPad mini being some sort of like foldable tablet type of thing. But we've got several foldable Androids now, Shirlin, and they seem pretty good. The prices are getting down there. At least, like, most of them are under the price of an iPhone Pro Max, even. If you're considering an Android phone, why don't you just get a foldable? Unless you want something under $500.
I think the main concern has always been, like, durability mm-hmm. and battery life on these things. And, like, the Light Razors get, like, a slightly higher IP rating than before. And, again, with the crease not looking as bad. And then there's a new hinge on these new Razors, too. There's a lot of good things. I don't know that we'll ever see a foldable iPhone. I think we see a foldable iPad mini first, but, you know.
Or something, yeah.
You're right that they are cheaper now, right? At $1,000 for the higher end ones, for the flips anyway, not the bigger folds. These are pretty feasible as your daily driver if you're okay with your phone lasting only a day, not two.
How much is the Galaxy Flip now? Isn't that like $800?
It's about $999 as well. Like, it starts at them, and it does have that nicer cover display. I want to see Samsung do more with the Flip. And speaking of, we'll learn more come July. We'll get to that in a bit.
We'll learn more from Samsung. I mean, we're also still waiting for, like, Google is not doing like a top down fold. The
Flip style, the one, Pixel, the mini
fold,
one.
Right. It's just, yeah. The Pixel Fold opens up. So,
yeah.
I could see them doing something. It just seems like the main appeal of Android is like you can get a really killer phone for $500 or less. But if you're willing to bump up a little more, it does seem like if you're going to spend $700 or $1,000 on a phone, get a flippy.
Yeah, you might as well like get something that the hardware is intriguing. That point. I do want to point out, has Sam in the chat says that the issue with Moto has always been their horrible software update record, which,
yes,
very good point. Yes. And again, Sam does point out that Motorola says that the Razors will receive 3 major Android OS upgrades and 4 years of software support. That's a jump from last year, but it's still short of the 7 years you're getting from Samsung and Google's more recent devices. So, like, good for bumping the number of years of support up, Moto, but you're still so far behind the competition. That's
always good.
Not great. Yeah.
I feel like the thing, when you mentioned Magician Trillin, all I think about, I don't take magicians seriously. I'm not super excited by them, but I think about Joe Bluth in Arrested Development. And I can imagine if they had gotten Will Arnett to come here and just do his Joe Bluth thing while sort of being sarcastic about Samsung features, that would have been funny.
I gotta say,
that would have been at least entertaining.
I was looking around the event. First of all, they were like, so the event started at 6 and was going to end at like 10. I bounced before 8, by the way, because like...
At night?
Yeah, that's why I was able to go. Wow. It was like amazing. After work. That's why I was like, all right, it's after work, so it's not
really...
And then
you're really pushing it, Motorola. I know, so, like, you want people to hang out with you after
so you
dinner.
You show up at 8, wow. At 6, that there was no food until after like 7:45. Never mind. I showed up really for the food. But anyway, and then Paris Hilton was slated to show up at like 8 or something, but I think she started after 8 from
she's gonna come in fast.
I heard from
late.
Friends
come
afterwards. On. Yeah. But anyway, at 6. And then the why was I starting? Oh, I was looking around. I got in at like 6:10 or something. And people, it was already like the seating area in front of the magician's performance area was already full. And I was like, all right, these are the plants, right? Like, these are the plants. These have to be.
Have you people never seen a magician before?
I don't know. I don't think it's, I swear to God, I think they were all plants. Like, there's a lot of audience participation that all requires. I think if you know magic tricks, you'll know that there's a lot of like planted actors. Anyway.
That makes sense, actually.
Yeah. Anyway, I was looking around and I was like, yeah, I noticed that there was a suspicious amount of people already there. But B, I was like, wow, does Motorola have a lot of money still? Like, what is going on? They've, you know, got Paris Hilton. They got this magician. They got this big space
in
Brooklyn.
They got a magician, not even like a name.
I gotta say, I think they have a name and I just can't remember, which sucks. But there you go.
You know.
So I don't know. Motorola must be doing something right, or Lenovo is financing it like crazy. You know, because Lenovo owns Motorola.
I don't know. I mean, Paris Hilton is not a big pull. Paris Hilton, the last we saw with her was doing like an ad deal with Twitter, right?
The last I heard of her is on her reality TV series where she's being a mom. But
that's even beyond that. But like D tier celebrity at this point. The Elon Musk will hey, you're not mad at me yet. Would you like to do something with Twitter? Yeah, I don't know. Okay. Well, the phones look nice. The event seems, they should get David Blaine. Like when they finally get when they get rid of the bezel, how do you make the bezel disappear?
Oh, God.
Magic trick.
God, no.
That cringe. Would be hilarious.
Cringe. So much cringe.
Cringe. Okay. Anything else on the Moto Razr?
No, I will say that they're kicking off photable season and we're going to hear more about that in just a little bit.
Foldable fall, as it were. Foldable fall. We are, because summer just started. Oh my God. Okay. So Samsung is doing something in July.
Yeah.
We thought we were kind of chill for the summer, at least for July and August, but no, never. So what's going on there?
Samsung officially announced that the second unpacked of the year of every year is happening this year on July 10th. Wonderful round of applause. July 10th is a lot earlier than we're used to, right? These second unpacks used to be, you know, taking place either during IFA, which would be in September, or like end or mid-August. And it's just gone earlier and earlier. And now it's in the middle of July. Great. Hey, you know who else announced their like important dates for July? Amazon's Prime Day is going to be July 16th and 17th. So if you understand the consumer tech media business, you'll know that that's really a lot of work for a lot of people. So I don't appreciate the timing here, but Samsung, anyway, officially announced July 10th and it's holding its event in Paris, of all places. Now, earlier this year when it had the S24 unpacked, Samsung did that in San Jose, which Silicon Valley, everybody was like, oh, mm-hmm, yeah, it's linked mm-hmm. to AI. And, you know, that's why they chose Silicon Valley for that launch event. So if you think about Paris, other than Paris Hilton, Paris and friends, are you thinking fashion? Are you thinking
bedbug controversy from last year?
Oh, so. Yeah. Anyway, I won't be going. Thank goodness. Yeah. I'm just not. thanks for talking about bedbugs because I now will have
bed
nightmares.
Bugs. Yeah.
But I think considering that this time of year, Samsung's always launching foldables and wearables, watches make sense for the fashion sort of setting. And then, like, if they wanted to make their flip the a ring, bit more stylish. Yeah. And also, yes, we are expecting to see the Galaxy ring that they teed up in January. I mean, there's a lot to expect from Samsung. And like I said, it's going to be foldable fall, I guess. Ben, our producer, is pointing out that the Olympics are also in Paris. But is it in July? I think it is.
Also true. Late July.
Late July. Okay, August. So okay, they're trying to get out of there maybe before the Olympics really fully kick off.
I guess riding some of the fitness hype maybe. Like, especially if there's a watch.
The watch and the Galaxy ring. So a lot of potential tie-in things. Now we already have...
Oh, Olympics rings.
Wow.
Multicolored Samsung Galaxy rings.
Can you imagine if they make colors? That? Come on. Can't.
Even. Yeah.
Anyway, you heard it here first. Ben and Devendra both predicted it. On the Engadget podcast, Samsung's going to use the Galaxy ring as the Olympics. Some kind of Olympics tie-in. Would not be surprised.
The official Olympics wearable that nobody will ever buy, but yes.
Will it
yes.
get them all to not sleep in the same rooms? Anyway, head on over to Engadget.com. We already have like a what to expect out of Samsung sort of preview article up.
Are we excited about the ring yet? Like, we talked about it. I talk about my ambivalence around ring gadgets in general. How are you feeling now,
I'm Charlotte? With you. Like, I don't wear that Aura ring anymore. I just will have someone else who is more happy to wear rings, I guess, to review it. Like, I really liked what the Aura ring did in terms of the insights for sleep. Because it's something I was happy to wear to sleep, even though I kind of still didn't like it. I was like, all right, it's better than a watch. Mm-hmm. But it also actually gave very good and different information, the Aura sort of system, about my sleep than I was used to. So that was nice to see. But otherwise, no, I wash my hands too many times a day for a ring to be really a feasible thing to wear.
I mean, you could wash your hands with the ring.
I can, but I don't like to. I don't like to have moisture retained around the ring. I will still take it off anyway.
So it's mainly cooking is the time where you want to be like, I don't want to get sauce and oil and whatever.
I'm very finicky about my just my comfort.
I feel you. I feel like the only thing that I felt that was good for sleep tracking back in the day, we will often bring this up, but RIP Jawbone, RIP the Jawbone app, a device that was too beautiful. Yeah. To survive in this world and also too bug-ridden. So,
RIP, the Amazon had this sleep tracking Halo Rise. Gosh, that thing was great. I miss it. But I think maybe the...
You miss Amazon staring at you and judging
Look,
you?
Look, someone in our chat earlier today when we were talking about that AI feature where you take a photo of your outfit to generate wallpapers thing, someone in our chat mentioned, didn't Amazon have a camera that you would take photos of your outfit? That. I was like, yeah, I loved it. I will say that the person in the chat who said that, like, who mentioned that feature was like, wasn't it creepy when people realized they were undressing in front of an Amazon camera? I was like, I was not undressing in front of the camera to start. I would dress up somewhere else and then go in front of the camera thing. But
it sounds like a really easy to use device.
I still have it at home. It doesn't work anymore. Like the Halo Rise, I have like a little, my own personal graveyard of Amazon devices that I loved watching me.
They just threw money at so many things. The Fire Phone, all these dumb devices. Oh my God.
I can't wait to see what Panos Panay does with Amazon hardware. But we are digressing just so slightly. Back to the Samsung Unpacked event. Like, I think in addition to the Galaxy Ring, we're expecting also, like, just making an educated guess here, probably going to see the new Galaxy Z Fold, a Z Flip, Galaxy Watch. I think they had a Watch Pro in the past too, and then we still haven't seen new Buds, right? So like, there's a lot. Have we seen a new tablet in a while? I don't know. I mean, so that's a lot. That's a lot of things to kind of expect Samsung to unveil. I will also say that in that announcement about Unpacked, Samsung also mentions the words Galaxy AI is here. Wonderful, excellent.
Are they going to show Bixby just evolving into true
AI? What if, like,
AI,
Bixby is just AI running a baton relay?
Bixi.
Sort of in Paris. That's part of their event.
Oh, boy. Okay, well, we'll see. Do you think it is wise? I could see August being a good time to, like, get away from the iPhone hype, like, have some time to yourself. That's what Google's doing. But July, nobody's thinking about updating devices. Everyone's waiting to see like what the future things are, yeah. especially should I get an iPhone or iPad. So July.
I would not be surprised now that you and Ben brought it up that like it is absolutely Olympics timing. Like they're timing it for try to get ahead of the Olympics so that they can make their Olympics announcement, something like that. Would not be surprised if that is like a part of the reason. So there you go.
There you go. Well, I mean, let's talk about the Google thing because we're talking about like upcoming events and Google's announcing basically August 13th, right, is going to be the next Google, the Made by Google event where we're expecting new Pixels and stuff. Do we feel differently about this? Because this is like, this is just going to be their major device launch. It's not going to be tied to any events otherwise.
So Google announced the Made by Google event is happening on August 13th. And like you said, it's a bit of time for itself. And I want to go on a rant after this about all of this. Not a rant, like a little sideways talk. Google traditionally in its like second half of the year event, its hardware launch brings us new Pixel phones, probably a new Pixel watch, maybe new Pixel Buds, similar slate of devices, I would say, as Samsung, except for because Google doesn't usually have like a January event to launch its actual flagship devices, it will have both like a standard phone and maybe a foldable as well. Or we're probably due to see like a new Pixel Fold, as well as the Pixel.
It's been 2 years, right?
It's two or one. Everything blends into one to me. But yeah, it could be like 2 years by now. But we really liked that thing, right? Like we really liked it when it came out. It was very thin. It had all the.
It's 1 year. It's 1 year. Yeah. It just feels like
it 2. It feels like 2. Yeah. So there's the Pixel Fold 2 we're expecting to see, and then the Pixel 9 series of phones, and then whatever the Pixel Watch 3, I believe, is also on the agenda, hopefully, probably. And then finally, maybe some other devices after all of that internal reorganization under Rick Osterloh happened earlier this year that The Verge reported on. Maybe we'll see some other hardware from like the Nest side of things. It's a lot of speculation on my end, but that's an educated guess, right? Based on historical evidence, based on what's out there and other stuff that I know.
Sherwin knows things. Okay, well, so July event that we'll be all planning for. I will be gone. Sorry, guys. Also August. So it's like there's no break. No break during the summer. And then like once this Google thing is done, we're all like just thinking about iPhone and thinking about like what's going to happen with Apple and the whole fall and everything. No rest for us, I guess. Are you looking to covering things or focusing on any kinds of other stories in July and August, Sherlyn?
I mean, I would
now that we have,
always
may have a little time to breathe.
I would love to take a break, but in July I'm traveling right after Prime Day, and I don't know. I don't think I'll be able to escape any of the coverage. And Google, by the way, is hosting its event in Mountain View. And as much as I would like not to travel, I do, you know, want to say hi to some of the Google people I know that work there, get some FaceTime with some executives, because that's always good for kind of like making sure Engadget gets like good information and do some reporting from the scene. So I might
You got to report. Yeah,
exactly. So that's I mean, it's possible. I don't know, but you haven't finalized our plans yet is the reason. I'm not being like cagey on purpose. We don't have anything firm to say. But I did RSVP. I mean, I'm always like, invite me to things. I will always say yes, but I may or may not show up. That's like my thing.
Oh, boy. Okay. Well, okay. So that's new Moto Razors, which look pretty cool. Check out our hands-on coverage. And we're, I guess, soon going to be prepping for the Samsung Galaxy Impact.
Hardware season is coming.
After that.
Yeah.
Prepping for the Google Pixel event.
Hey, Kevin says in our chat asked, what about Fitbit? And I would like to point out that Pixel Watch 3 is probably like you can consider it almost a Fitbit device because, you know, Google owns Fitbit. And also Fitbit did launch the Ace LTE wearable for kids last month. So, you know, Fitbit is still doing its own thing. I don't know if they're going to do anything new for this Made by Google event, though. So there you go.
And I mean, they just say, yeah, they had a big turnaround too of employees and things too. Like, what is Fitbit even anymore? Man, I remember when we were excited about wearables. I remember when that stuff was cool and everybody was trying different ideas, and Fitbit was not owned by Google and was a lot more nimble, you know? Yeah. Okay. We'll be looking forward to all this stuff and check out our coverage on the Motorola Razors. All right, let's move on to some other news. And I think one of the surprise stories this week is that Julian Assange, the founder of WikiLeaks, who has been in prison for a few years, was hiding out in an embassy in London, right? After WikiLeaks put out the documents, like a lot of secret documents, classified documents around the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. The U.S. did not like that. So he is now free from prison. He pled guilty to the Espionage Act at a courthouse in Saipan. I just saw the news, he has arrived back in his homeland of Australia. He's reuniting with his wife. He's not actually saying much except saying, let me see here. The deal required Assange to plead guilty to conspiring to unlawfully obtain and disseminate classified information relating to the national defense of the United States. He did defend himself in court. He did say, let me see here. Working as a journalist, I encouraged my source to provide information that was said to be classified in order to publish that information. I believe the First Amendment protected that. And of course, his source was Chelsea Manning, too. So they also went to prison for a while. There has been a lot of discussion about how, is this an unfair thing? Should the government go so harshly against leakers, but especially if it's classified information? I think that's where it gets so messy. You know, Chelsea Manning spent years in prison. It was 6 or 7 years. And then Obama, I think, commuted her sentence. So that kind of worked out better there. But it is, I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on this, Roland? Because we've been talking about the Julian Assange stuff for so long. It felt like the story would never end. And it's not done yet. He's going to say things. His supporters are going to be out there trying to, say that, spin this a certain way, too. I don't know. What do you think about it?
I mean, the question that you were getting at near the end of that portion there is that, does the penalty befit the crime? And, it's hard, right? You have to talk about, national security is one thing. We also have to talk about, who was affected? What's the, net good or net harm? It's really hard to, decide. Then there's a reason I'm not in the legal judiciary system to, decide these things. But,
it's kind of I think, one major argument I've seen against WikiLeaks over time is that, listen, leakers getting confidential government information out there has been hugely important in the history of this country. The Pentagon Papers that was classified information that was massively Snowden. Influential in terms of, well, that's
different.
I'm going to get to that. Yeah. But the Pentagon Papers, that definitely helped us get a sense of what was actually happening in Vietnam and showed how bad the Vietnam War was for America and how kind of a failed war it was. Assange points out that he says the First Amendment and the Espionage Act are in contradiction of each other. He accepts his actions were in violation of the espionage statute and that it would be difficult to win such a case given all the circumstances. Basically, if you leak anything, even if it's you believe it's for the greater good, the government will come down against you with the full weight of its justice powers. The argument against WikiLeaks is that they did not do anything to redact confidential information, especially things around, I believe it was locations of agents and people working around the world. There was a lot of really sensitive stuff. We're not really redacted. And what Snowden had done was a little different. He had worked directly with Glenn Greenwald, who has now fallen far from from being played by Spock in the Snowden movie. Glenn Greenwald, you have fallen very far. But the Snowden stuff, they were working together with journalists who did a lot of that information, redacted a lot of confidential stuff. And even he ended up being, hounded and stuck in Russia and also not being the hero of the left that a lot of people wanted him to be. But whatever, that information is out there. Do you ever talk to people, Sherlyn, around the Snowden reveals or Spectre? Do you ever hear people actually talk about it? Wasn't it weird that we learned that the U.S. government and a lot of governments were actively spying on citizens and we just don't talk about it? Have you ever encountered people actually discussing it in your daily life outside of tech circles?
I don't think people talk about it anymore. I think back in the day, yes. I might have been a bit too...
Did you have conversations back then with people? I'm just wondering, like, if you encountered this in the real world outside of the media world, you know?
No, because the people I was talking to back then were all media people. Like, I didn't have many, like, I think it was, like, early in my move to America days. So
that's all you had.
All my friends were my J school friends. And it was, like, yeah. And none of Singaporeans didn't really... They like they knew the name.
Oh yeah, you guys are used to it.
Yeah, we're just we're like, of course the government's spying on you. Everything, you know, like it's not. I mean, no, we don't think our government's spying on us, but it's ingrained in us to like be careful what we say because if the government overhears you talking shit about them, they like jail you. But the thing is, I think the question here is the responsible treatment of like sensitive private information that could like lead to harm of individual people, but also like. I don't know. I mean, like, people, wasn't there a John Oliver segment on, like, people getting names confused of, like, do you know who Julian Assange is? Do you know who Edward Snowden is? And then people were like, oh, the WikiLeaks guy. And they were like, no, Snowden's not the WikiLeaks guy. Like, there's a lot of confusion around all of this.
There's a lot of confusion,
I think,
yeah.
In the moment, we didn't have conversations as much around, like, what Snowden revealed. But I think we're feeling the impact of it now where, like, everyone is aware that there's a lot of stuff that's spying on you, whether it's your social media, whether your phone, whether it's the government, and there's like heightened like antitrust sentiment, like just nobody trusts anyone anymore. So that's what we're feeling, I feel. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. There has to be room like for people to actually divulge information if they think things are going wrong. But yeah, unfortunately, yeah, that does not work with the way governments and classified information
work. Whistleblowing without retaliation is like a huge like thing that needs to be supported, but I don't know that it is.
We're gonna be talking about this story for a while too. Like Assange is gonna be much louder now. He's gonna be doing many interviews and probably gonna have all sorts of like deals out of this. So we're gonna be talking about this story for a while, and certainly it's gonna be worth diving deeper into it too. So I'm looking for a good guest to talk to around that stuff. There are a couple other major bits of news we saw this week too. The Supreme Court ruled that it allows the White House to request removal of misinformation on social media. This was, I'm just reading out here from NPR. Basically, I believe this was the result of a conservative complaints of the Biden administration going to social media companies and just asking them to remove specific bits of news around misinformation. I think one thing revolved around Biden's granddaughter. So just specific bits that they thought were being like put out there badly. And, you know, the government was essentially trying to stop what it called misinformation. I've seen a lot of commentary where people are saying this actually does set a bad precedent because, okay, what is misinformation? Could a more nefarious regime, if there was another Trump regime or something, could a more nefarious administration use this badly and just like define misinformation as stuff they just don't like? That could be kind of a problem. I don't know if you have you thought about this at all, Sherlyn?
You just can't trust people, right? Like you can put something in place that's supposed to protect people, they tear it down because they think it's gonna be like abused, or you can put something in place that was bad and tear it down to protect other. I don't know. It's like I don't trust that like a specific administration anymore. You know what I mean? Like sometimes they do bad things because they're dumb. Sometimes they do bad things because they're bad. Sometimes they don't think. I don't know. I have very little faith in a lot of these things. So no matter how this falls, I feel like the outcome, it's A, ongoing, and B, like, I have very little faith.
What's interesting about this case, too, is it was Amy Comet Barrett who, you know, is a Trump appointee who kind of really tore down this whole thing, because I think at some point the plaintiffs were saying the White House was bombarding Twitter with requests to set up a streamlined process for censorship, and that never really happened. Let me see here. I'm going to read from NPR. In her opinion for the majority court, the court majority, Barrett said that at every turn, the alleged facts turn to dust and that the plaintiffs have failed to trace the past or potential harm to anything done by officials at the White House, the CDC, the FBI, or key cybersecurity agencies. So it's just like a lot of it was kind of thrown out because a lot of this was ruled as baseless. Just kind of interesting. But I don't know what this sets precedents for. I think a lot of people are worried, especially people worried about information, overall freedom of information. So there is that. We also saw another Supreme Court story. Actually, just hit this morning, the Supreme Court has blocked the Biden administration's plan to curb air pollution from basically key polluting states, I think, in the Midwest and places like West Virginia, basically to stop them or at least help them prevent spewing emissions that would go into other states. So here's the story right now. The Supreme Court put a temporary hold on the EPA plan to do that, basically to curtail air pollution that drifts across state lines. I think the ruling before was that states essentially were going to have to deal with it themselves. They would all have to come up with their own plans for figuring out how do they would deal with their own messy air. And because that didn't happen, the EPA was trying to come up with rules to set it up so that they could actually help curtail this. It's just not going anywhere. This is another blow against the EPA, and can think another blow against the government to actually stop things like air pollution or things that would make the environment better. What's interesting is that Amy Coney Barrett was among the dissenters for this one too. She joined the three liberal members to push against this. I don't know if you have thoughts on this ruling, because this one just hit, but it is kind of astounding. Like, at every turn, it's basically we have a very conservative Supreme Court who will always lean on conservative values and states' rights rather than something that could help people. I don't know.
I think we've not given the EPA a lot of authority to do what it needs to do, basically.
Yeah, I mean, basically taking it away at every single turn, or at least blocking whatever plans. There's the other thing too about the EPA can't set their own environmental protections. Like, they can't set standards. That was a whole other thing. So the EPA just can't really do much these days. That's a pain. We're going to see more about that story too. And maybe there's going to be pushback against that. Let's talk about the Rabbit R1. Because there was a hilarious chain of events where the group, the Rabbitude community that is reverse engineering the Rabbit R1 software, revealed that they found a security issue within the company's code that leaves sensitive information accessible to everyone. Did you see this thing, Trillin? Because it just seems wild. It seems like there were API keys that were like open and vulnerable. People could use it to see pretty much any information, like any response that the R1 device has given to people, including personal information. It could also be used to brick R1 devices, alter the R1's responses, replace the device's voice. This seems bad. Dare you surprised that this company was not really thinking about security very hard the Rabbit R1?
I love talking about Rabbit, because every time something comes up with this company, I just start to laugh. I was very like, you know, I bought into the whole hype thing. I was like, oh, this is so cool. The API stuff that they're trying to build to make their large action model work seems really intriguing. And then, yeah, clearly haven't thought it through. Don't seem to have tested everything. I think the most egregious thing is that the Rabbitude people say that the company Rabbit has known about the issue for the past month and, quote, did nothing to fix it. And then after they posted, they said that Rabbit revoked 11 Labs' API key, even though it broke R1 devices for a bit. But Rabbit did tell Engadget in an email or a statement that was only made aware of, quote, an alleged data breach, end quote, on June 25th. So 2 days? It's a he said, she said almost. And I don't know.
I would not trust Rabbit. Why? What?
I mean, look, maybe here's the thing. It's like you can say that you inform someone at the company and say that the company has known about the issue for the past month, but maybe that one person that you informed didn't tell the whole company. Like, there's so many like little nuances that can be missed in this that like they do have some gray area that they're playing in right now. And both people could be like saying like the truth and both correct. But
I like how you're trying to be nice and fair here. This company has produced one of the worst devices we've ever seen, a thing that is functionally useless. And I can't trust literally anything coming out of their mouth. So I saw on the Rabbit, I'm still in the Rabbit Discord channel. They were doing some updates yesterday. They were like, oh, we made a page to update all the news we have around this security issue. We're going to get to the bottom of this. And I cannot trust this silly company. It's just such a hilarious thing. So anyway, massive data breach. If you have a Rabbit device, I would say maybe turn that into a nice accessory on your shelf.
No, some Solidus T. Solidus T in our chat said that someone is running full Android on Rabbit R1. So, you know, hey, go crazy.
It's just a little, it's a tiny powerless Android device. So yes, I'm sure you could run full Android on it. Stop using the Rabbit R1. That may be the main takeaway here. We also saw another story that Uber is apparently locking out New York drivers out of its apps. It seems like sometimes in the middle of their shifts because of a city pay rule, and Lyft is apparently threatening to do the same. This is kind of a local story, but it's also a broader story too, because this kind of like ties into things where they were both Uber and Lyft had lockouts in 2019 around like the flat minimum wage requirement for drivers. They threatened to pull out of Minneapolis because the city was trying to force a driver pay raise up. So these companies have generally done things that have been kind of ruthless against the people working for them. And then they blame city regulations or state regulations for that. What, I don't know if you saw the story, Shalyn, or do you have any thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, I heard about like the past situation where there's like a minimum wage sort of situation that's, you know, caused some of this. And it's not easy for companies like this to navigate. I'm not taking their side. I think it's silly, but they need to find a way to make it work, not just lock people out of like the apps that make the money.
Like, see, you know, it seems this is the way, like, because they don't want to pay people.
Right. That's the problem. But the problem is, like, if Uber starts to pay its drivers for, like, when it doesn't have, you know, they're not picking up actual rides, and like, where does that money come from? It's capitalism all over again, right? Capitalism is the problem because they're going to try to pass that on to consumers. And then we're going to start complaining that Ubers are too expensive. And then we're going to stop using it as much. And then less, it's like a cycle. Duh.
I mean, we should remember it's hard to trust Uber. It's hard to trust Uber given how ruthless this company was at the beginning and how it just flaunted its own service against regulations, especially in New York. So,
well, here they've had a leadership change since then, and the new like CEO is like a more grounded person, it seems like. And I think that
he's trying to be better.
To be better, but I still think that it's more of an industry sort of shift, right? Where the gig economy is kind of the way things are right now. I think I've seen some reports saying that like 50% of the workforce is going to be freelance in a certain number of years. And we're already seeing the effects of this. We need to be rethinking the entire system of how we pay people for gig work and for like non-working hours, that sort of thing. It's starting to show.
It's not really non-working hours is the thing. Like, I'm going to read from our story. The mid-shift lockouts stem from a six-year-old NYC pay rule that requires ride-sharing companies to pay drivers for idle time between fares. So I don't consider that non-working hours. That is time you are driving around the city and like looking for fares, waiting for a fare to hit before you accept one. So going on with the story here, capped how long drivers without passengers can be paid means Uber is paying them less, but it also means that drivers are taking home much less money for the same amount of time on the clock, and they can't predict when they'll lose access to the app. One driver told Bloomberg that they used to work 10 hours and make $300 to $350. Now they're working 10 hours and barely making $170.
Unpredictability is like one of the worst things of this whole situation, which is also, by the way, very surprising to me, because every time I'm like in an Uber, I see like the driver gets a next ride before I'm even out of the car.
Oh, sure, you know what I mean?
So I'm like, whoa, there's people sitting around like looking for rides. So that's where my
sometimes
brain's at. Yeah.
I mean, I've seen drivers like running Lyft and Uber simultaneously and will like pause one and take one of the other just so they keep themselves going. But it does seem it's because like it's based on the amount of work you're doing and you're not working a set amount of time. That's kind of the big pain. I don't know if you've ever worked like a, I don't know, like a simple service level job, Sherlyn, where like you had to rely on shifts being given to you. And sometimes you would not get a shift, or sometimes like you have to ask, or sometimes a shift would be put on you.
Yep.
This would happen to me like when I was working in sales. Like, it's just you have very little control over how much money you can actually make, and it's all just kind of capricious. It depends on like your manager and your company doing it. I don't even know how the Uber thing is working, because Uber is like so famously algorithmic, right? Drivers do not have a human manager to talk to. They put complaints in the app, and the app will like tell them, go here, take this direction or something. So I almost wonder too, like, this is likely an algorithmic lockout that's happening because it's how Uber works. So anyway, next time you have a cheap Uber, just think about like the costs here and make sure to tip your drivers. Because I had a really long conversation with my last driver to the airport, and they were just lamenting like, these companies are just paying us less and less. Like every week, it seems like their pay is going down, even though they're doing the same amount of trips. So think of that, folks. One thing I don't mind doing, especially at airports, is like the Uber lines are kind of a mess. You think you're booking a car, but then you have to run to the thing and like find it. And every time I go to an airport, like the taxi lines are just like full, completely full and waiting to pick up people. So there are other ways to get around. Take public transportation. You don't have to rely on Uber and Lyft for everything. One other thing we want to talk about, and we're going to do something special for the live stream here. Toys R Us, or the folks who own Toys R Us right now, has released a brand ad, like a brand film that was created entirely using OpenAI's Sora. And folks, it's a nightmare. It is an absolute nightmare. So we're going to play it here live in the stream and comment on it. And those of you in the chat can join us. You could go take a look. Just Google this thing too. You can find it online. So I'm going to kick off this video. Let's just take a look, and Trillin, feel free to shout out like your emotions, like how you're feeling about this thing as we're seeing it. So let me unmute this tab and hit play.
Did you ever wonder how Toys R Us and Jeffrey the Giraffe came to be?
That's a lot of cars.
The bike shop owner, Charles Lazarus, had a vision that would go on to change toy stores forever.
That kid's head is just not shaped right. It's so weird.
My gosh, this kid looks so strange. This reminds me of that game I play called Match Factory, by the way.
Don't you miss Toys R Us?
Whose voice is this?
It doesn't even look like Jeffrey. They're iconic Jeffrey.
Too much stuff.
This is a different looking Jeffrey now. They can't keep the design right.
Is this the same kid?
Toys R Us. No, the giraffe is named Jeffrey.
But also the kid looks different, kind of. Dreams
come true. Yes. And the dream continues on. Toys R Us.
The Toys R Us at every Macy's.
They mean nightmare, yes?
They mean nightmare. So I guess this is an ad meant to remind people that Toys R Us is not fully dead yet. The company that owns the assets of Toys R Us is now working together with Macy's. And I don't know, have you been to Macy's lately, Sherlyn? There are little Toys R Us sections there now. It's just, it's not the same.
No,
it's not the
not.
Same as like going through. Did you guys have anything like Toys R Us?
Yep, Toys R Us, yeah.
So like going through the giant store filled with toys. My childhood memories is buying video games from Toys R Us, which was a weird thing because you'd have to pull a paper and like go up to the counter and hope that it was actually in stock. But as a kid who only got like one or two games a year, it was always like a monumental event to go to play games for free for demos. Those experiences you will not get at the Toys R Us at Macy's. And this is one of the first Sora AI produced ads I've seen. I think it kind of looks like a nightmare. Like the kid just looks inhuman is the thing. Like I'm getting a lot of revulsion here.
There's a lot of very uncanny valley going on. Like the movement of the kid's neck when like they reacted and recoiled almost a little bit, not in a, like a bad way, but it looked a little robotic, very strange. And then like, yeah, their face would change depending on the angle that they were being shot from, according to the AI. And then the ad has these very clear labels that this is made by not just AI, but also some VFX team on Toys R Us's side. So like there's some cleaning up, because I will say that for like a Sora made video, it's clean, right? There's not too many glaring like errors, like too much teeth or too many fingers, that sort of thing.
They had to like likely redo things quite a bit.
They probably
had
to clean it up.
They likely had to clean it up. But also what we have read and seen from people testing Sora is that the prompts kind of like break down after a while. So you can do like 10 second clips or something, but the longer you go, the crazier and like wilder it gets. It just can't like keep a story straight. So I'm like making a video in Sora is just like a lot of like little tiny prompts, and hope you cross your fingers and you hope it's not a complete nightmare. I'm getting a lot of like, people are bringing this up in the chat, but I'm getting a lot of like Polar Express the mocap stuff that Zemeckis was doing. But even like I've seen all of those movies. I saw Beowulf, which I think was one of the first ones he did. And those don't feel as weird and inhuman to me as this does. But I'm also somebody that likes genuine animation too. And those had like painterly animation, whereas this is like inhuman CG child trying to be human, and it's just like not quite right. So you know, there's your nightmare fuel for the week, folks. Enjoy. Let's move on to what we're working on. Hey, I just produced the Surface Pro Copilot Plus review. That is out there. Video is going to be up on YouTube. I'm also currently testing Kia's EV9, the three-row SUV that Sam and I have been like eyeing for a while. So I'm testing it, hoping to write up something about using it as a family car. What's up with you, Sherlyn?
Yeah, doing a lot of summer/fall event planning. We're also doing some testing of the Apple betas just to see, just to get ready to, you know, break out any sort of stories that might be interesting. And, you know, hopefully get ahead of that crushing fall hardware season. So that's me.
Lots of plans. Do you want to mention anything yeah. around the site, Sherlyn? Because you dropped some in.
Last week, we had a story from Carissa Bell go up, and it's titled How Small Claims Court Became Meta's Customer Service Hotline, where people are apparently having to go to court as a last-ditch attempt to recover their accounts. It's pretty incredible, and the story did really well for us. I think there's some really interesting stories in here that you might want to take a look at. And if you haven't already, it's really good reporting from Carissa. I just thought, you know, it's worth shouting out here on the podcast so that people can go read it. And if you've got, you know, been locked out of your Meta account for some silly reason, or you got hacked or something and you're not getting help directly from Meta, apparently there are people who are having some success in small claims court, which is really ridiculous if you come to think about it.
It's kind of, I mean, I guess it makes sense because these companies do not often have easy ways to get access to customer service, right? That was a complaint with Amazon for a while.
Right, exactly.
I think they've gotten better about that. But yeah, man, just be persistent if you have a lot of issues with these companies. Also, small claims court is like one of those things that is just like useful for people, but you have to like stick with it and you have to spend money to actually make that thing happen to, you know, bring up your issues.
And time, lots of time.
Let's move on to our pop culture picks for the week. What do you have, Sherlyn?
Two main things. One, I can't remember if I've mentioned this before, but I've been watching Wild Isles on Prime Video. It is nature documentary stuff narrated by David Attenborough about the British Isles. And each episode is of the five, like, limited series episodes, like, of five episode limited series. Each episode focuses on a different type of wildlife. So the first episode is just like general wildlife. The second episode is like forest. The third is like fields. The fourth is like freshwater. The fourth is like ocean, stuff like that. It's really cool because the footage is incredible. The BBC commissioned this TV series, and you know, the team spent 3 years just camouflaged in the midst of like bird poop infested woods to just get you like really neat thermal image footage of like a million birds roosting in this little patch.
Cool. I mean,
and how they're picked off by owls.
Planet Earth.
Yeah. I mean,
forever. Yeah.
They have, but this is like the thermal image technology is, according to the show, like new. And a lot of these, the footage to me is really cool because, I mean, I haven't never seen a slug. I forget the full name of this slug, but like a slug in the middle of the night is glowing and it made it with another slug. So I've seen a slug's dick, just so you know.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I also saw two snakes going at it. Did you know that male snakes, their sexual organs have things on them that help them stay attached to the female snake? Yeah. Anyway.
I can imagine.
For that and more risque footage of animals going at it, you can check out Wild Isles on Prime Video. The other thing I will shout out.
How do you explain this to kids?
No, yeah. I mean, kids can watch it too. It's like animal sex, you know?
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
a euphemism. Well, I don't know. Anyway. And then also over the weekend, I saw The Bike Riders in theaters. It's that film about the motorcycle gang, the fictional motorcycle gang called the Vandals. But stars Austin
Butler. No, they're real. They're real. It's based on the whole real
thing. It's based on a real thing. The name is not the Vandals, though.
The name may be different. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
It was based on a picture book of an actual biker.
Yes. It's the picture book by Danny Lyons. And it stars Austin Butler, Tom Hardy. Jodie Comer is amazing. And I love her in it.
She's
I don't know
great.
If that's how you pronounce her last name. But And then also Mabu Norman Reedus shows up and I was like, yes, Norman Reedus, right? And he's kind of unrecognizable when he first shows up. I'm like, this is Norman Reedus, right? This is no. And
with the teeth and he looks God, like a dirty, he looks like a dirty hippie.
Such a meth head from, yeah, dirty hippie from California in the show, but like, oh, amazing. And then, yeah, I'm very inspired to go check out the story now, the written and the pictures. So if you're interested in sort of that type of history, motorcycle gang stuff, go check it out. But if not,
I mean it's more like motorcycle gangs in the style of like Goodfellas or something. I saw the movie and I reviewed it and it's like, it's good. I really like it and I like the director.
Yeah.
I feel like it was a little more, push a little harder.
Yeah,
tell us
yeah.
more about these characters. What exactly. is up with the Jodie Comer's character who exactly. literally has no inner life? What does yep. she do for a living?
I agree.
What are her hopes and dreams other than Austin Butler I would say, hot, which he is.
Yeah. I don't oh God, yeah. I don't know why I'm so annoyed by Austin Butler, but I did really like Tom Hardy in it. And I will say that like Tom Psycho in our chat yeah. says that they didn't like the ending of Bike Riders pissed them off, and that Jonathan Anderson says that mm-hmm. the Bike Riders was good but had some slow parts. Fully agree with both of these things. Mm-hmm. I just thought Tom Hardy plays obviously the same character over and over again, but he was quite good in this one. And then also,
well, with a different accent,
he slightly different accent. I love this one. I thought this one was good. I also like Jodie Comer's like accent in this one as well. But yeah, I am obviously not like super into the ending. I feel like you said, Devendra, they could have pushed harder on the storytelling here, but
got to push harder. Yeah. The ending feels like weak. It's just like, I watch a movie like this. I'm like, I want to just rewatch Goodfellas. You want to give me Goodfellas right. light? Let's go watch Goodfellas. Everybody, Goodfellas is a perfect movie. I want to shout out real quick. I talked about The Acolyte being great several weeks ago, and now we're at the point where my screeners have ended, and episode 5 of The Acolyte is one of those things that is just like, I was looking at this thing and like, how the hell does this exist? Something happens 3 minutes into this episode and I shouted out loud and my wife had to come downstairs to be like, what's happening? Are you okay? Because one of the wildest things I've ever seen in Star Wars happened within 3 minutes of this episode. There are prolonged fight scenes. I'm not going to reveal like what the thing is, but there is a big bad that everybody has been sort of like talking around, and they make their full appearance in this episode. And the fights are insane. Like, it is full on. I talked about this thing basically being Crouching Tiger, and they lean more into a lot of that stuff. Just the way you shoot a Hong Kong style fight scene. And like,
nice.
I'm all for it.
Nice.
The reveals are great. Shirlin, I think for your life and for your interests, you really should be watching the show. And I think you will be very happy where things go in episode 5. Keyword is arms. The arms in this episode are very, very good.
Okay.
If you're hanging around social media, the spoilers are out. I mean, listen, you've got muscly arms, Shalyn, but there's some good muscly arms in this episode. The spoilers are out there in social media. So I'm not going to like reveal things here.
I'm not trying to either,
and you will probably see clips, Shalyn, of certain actors who are revealed to be bad guys. I think you will really enjoy watching The Acolyte. So highly recommend it. I know you like Hong Kong
yes, arts, I do, yeah.
movies.
I will watch and this after like Star Wars. After I'm done with all the animal porn. Yeah.
Yeah. After the animal porn, it's good. It's so good. And now I go back and I'm looking at like how people online are responding to The Acolyte. And it's just like sheer trash fire. It is the fans who will reject anything made by women or featuring people of color, just like those bad Star Wars fans. They're still around. But also like a lot of weird nitpicking over the series. I'm not giving full judgment on the narrative until it's like done and I see a complete story, but what it is so far is fascinating and cool and action-packed, and I just freaking love it. So The Acolyte's still good. Catch up, folks, because you're going to be spoiled this weekend. I'm sure of it. I'm already seeing the GIFs and the memes out there on Twitter.
Well, that's it for the episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter, Blue Sky, Threads, all over the place, Mastodon. And I podcast about movies and TV at thefilmcast.com.
If you want to send me high-quality footage of slugs mating, I guess, please, PG-13 only. I am at Shirlin Low on Twitter or X, and at Shirlinstagram on threads. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes or your podcast catcher of choice. And subscribe anywhere you can get podcasts.